I had a wonderful time over the Thanksgiving weekend in Chicago, seeing family, picking up leaves, going to some great restaurants, and having a beautiful meal on Thanksgiving Day. But as the weekend approached, we started to get winter warnings on our phones, and it turned out a very large storm was coming to Chicago. I figured it would be a pretty high percentage of losing our flight on Sunday. And that prediction came true when Southwest informed us that there was no chance of any flights leaving on Sunday night. They offered to shift us to Monday, but I saw where this was going, and so I launched an incredibly stupid but enjoyable plan, which was to rent a car in Chicago and drive to Newark, New Jersey, pick up my car, and then drive north home. Nearly 900 miles, what could go wrong? Well, luckily nothing did, but I did find myself, as I traveled eastward ahead of a storm, with a lot of time to look at what I had on my phone to play for podcasts and other broadcasts to fill the time. I keep up to date on my podcasts, so I didn't have a huge selection there. So, for a large amount of the 17 hours of driving, I ended up listening to the full run of the Summoning Salt World Record Progression YouTube channel. To understand why I found this so compelling, and to talk about everything that happens with Summoning Salt's channel, I'll need to explain speedrunning. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and keeping myself out of debt. Thanks to Jeff Atwood, Dan Boyd, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me stay out of debt. Perhaps the irony in how I approach the world these days is that even though I'm known for being a historian and someone who looks backwards, one of the side effects of doing that is I have an intense like of the present and taking things day by day and treating each day as if it is truly special and the last of its kind. To that extent, if I see anything that gives weight or meaning to things that are ongoing, communities or perspectives or events, I love listening to it. Anything where a person looks around them for the moment and gives us context of the world around us. I mean, this is what journalism is truly supposed to be. And when it's in an area that has interest to me, or it's something that shows me why I should have interest, well, I'm a fan as long as they keep it going on. And Summoning Salt has put together a world record progression YouTube channel that is exquisite in its detail and attention to giving us a blow-by-blow of how we got to the present day. Speedrunning is the idea that a game, especially a game with a straight-up ending, has a time it will take to complete it, and that by optimizing your moves and how you play it, and in some cases incorporating bugs and glitches and tricks to get in there, you can bring that total performance number further and further down, maintaining the world record speed of that game. There are a number of Nintendo titles that are the gold standard for this. Super Mario platformers and Metroid and Zelda. Games which are classic, canonical, universally known, on hardware that everyone has access to, and that depends almost entirely on your talents and skill in playing the game to get that total number down. What I like about the Summoning Salt channel is that it doesn't just give you the world record and how it's done. He goes through the years and finds as many recordings of world record holdings as he can, and then pieces together how information passes between people, and the thrill when a minute is shaved off here or 10 minutes are shaved off here, to the point when 1 or 2 or 3 seconds are the difference between the record of yesterday and the mantle of today. You see, it's pretty hard to play a game focused 100% on speed. You have to have memorization. You have to have the ability to improvise. You have to go over and over and over through various levels that are known for being particularly difficult until, for you, it's an afterthought. You piece together strategy for dealing with certain kinds of enemies or going into a area that you're not supposed to get to, so the system glitches out enough to put you up one screen. Speedrunning has, over the years, built all sorts of rule sets, more than you would imagine, for calculating the quote-unquote total time. With Mario 64, it's when the final key lands and you grab it. A lot of games take this template, where the last moment that you can possibly manipulate with the controller and have any effect on the game is the official time to be called. In a couple cases, behavior on the part of the program makes it so that you have to do special in-between level calculations, because even though you're not doing anything, the time will change notably between when you touch a certain key and when you actually get the next level. And the time difference can be devastatingly different over the years. There are cases where it can be an hour and a half for a regular player running at what they think is full speed to get through a level. And within a few years, people are getting through it in 2, 3, and 4 minutes. There's one title, whose name I won't reveal, where speedruns were taking things down to 12 minutes, but they have gotten it down to 60 seconds. So the pure sports-like thrill of watching a top-quality player go through a level, well, I love watching that alone, but to watch somebody push through a game in a way that makes it completely fall underneath their hands, well, that's a different kind of thrill. Let me give you an example. There is a collection of films out there called Quake Done Quick and Quake Done Quick with a Vengeance. We have it on the Internet Archive. I think it's one of the classics of video game speedrunning history. It's a group of players who have each learned a level in a way that they can destroy it. I mean, take that thing fully apart. And it's not just a case of hitting things when you're supposed to and killing enemies quickly and getting out the door. There's one level where they beat it in something like 14 seconds. Now, Quake wasn't designed for you to go through the level in 14 seconds at all. But it turns out that if you use an explosive grenade and jump at just the right time, you will not just have an explosion, but it will propel your body to great damage in a direction. And if you jump at just the right time and aim just the right way, in a way that's practiced over hundreds of attempts, it will often propel you up into levels that you were not supposed to get to until later in the game. This move is practiced so much by the player that unless you know what's going on, you don't even notice that they just threw a grenade, blasted themselves across a chasm that's supposed to get a door later, and land bloodied and destroyed into an exit, giving them a spectacular short time. There's another component to speedrunning, which is understanding the context and, if you're really lucky, having an announcer or commentator who gives you the deal of what's going on the screen, because frankly, it's impossible sometimes to see what sort of trick is going on and why it works so well. The layers just keep coming. After a while, speedrunners will see things happen, but they won't know why, and people will go to the extent of disassembling the code, looking at how the game calculates collisions or how levels should work, and then figuring out why that trick works, and maybe even coming up with more intense ways to trigger off these bugs. It might turn out that the sprites are being calculated in such a way that if you get your player a little forward from where they're supposed to be, the game doesn't understand what level you're in, and so you can shoot forward, trick it, and then trigger off a level change such that it skips ahead to where it's supposed to be. There are cases where people figure out that if you commit an action next to a door, it doesn't know how to calculate the collision of the door and the action you're taking, and you'll go through the door. A trick that a lot of these games where you jump have is they calculate your velocity by how you're jumping forward and then reduce how much velocity there is based on various factors. So players will turn around backwards and memorize how to move backwards, knowing that the system will slowly give you more and more velocity as it subtracts, because even though your velocity is negative, the programmers never thought that they'd have to deal with a player who's looking the wrong way and jumping constantly backwards. A lot of these tricks get really clever names that are passed around and just used as the jargon, and the jargon of any group is fascinating to me. Bunny hop, star trick, canyon skipping, boss glitch, hammer suit. I mean, it's just so much fun to have it all told to me by somebody who knows what they're doing. So, not only do you have players who are playing these systems over and over again to become experts, and I mean over and over again. In one of the videos, it's explained that one person plays the game 22,000 times to get this one glitch working. Not many people do 22,000 of anything that doesn't have some basic biological aspect. I can tell you that there have been times when I'm working on something incredibly boring. Maybe I'm transferring floppy disks or ripping CDs or moving files from one area to another with maybe one or two criteria for me to move things in a different direction, meaning that I'm doing something 5,000 times and I have to do it differently 80 of those times. And when I'm in those situations, nothing calms me down or makes me feel like I'm not wasting my life than watching a speed run. Watching somebody go from the start to the finish of a game that is rich, deep, and beautiful, and choosing a speed run that doesn't have glitches and is doing quote-unquote full runs where you move through and don't use tricks. So if there's 120 stars or 50 pieces or all different parts of some sort of shield, you get to watch them using all of their ability to go through all of the aspects of the game. And some of the bigger titles have truly, at this point, come into their own in terms of complicated environments that change over the course of the game. And so for me, it's truly like watching an athletic feat that I can look over at, pause, rewind if I didn't understand what was going on, and then just get my job done, enjoying watching other people do something strange, obscure, and yet fun. To build up his documentaries, and they're essentially documentaries that Summoning Salt puts together, you have to have the actual footage of the world records. And Summoning has done an incredible job of dragging them out of all different areas, be it Twitch TV or the Internet Archive or the Speedrun Archives, to find footage or screen grabs or different kinds of postings about the speedrun's progress over the years. One of the things that comes out is a not insignificant amount of these arguably important points are already lost. Either the Twitch TV footage is gone, or there's no record of the original AVI, or there's no videotape footage online and they're just relying on screen grabs and trust. Summoning shows how things have changed over the years. Obviously, it's much easier now to post video, and people have been doing some real high-quality, high-resolution grabs of their works now. But if you go back more than 6 or 7 years, things start to get really dim. Summoning actually contacts some of the speedrunners to get the footage, or does screen grabs and researches it with other people's help to put together these things. And it really gives you another jolt to see how much is truly gone, and that unless somebody comes up with a context for a lot of history, it doesn't occur to people that they should set things aside or upload them. A day ago, I was handed IRC logs from 2009, which is not something that most people would really think are important, but these are the logs from the IRC server that Minecraft was being worked on at the time. It has all sorts of comments about this new game and what it can do and what would be important and what wouldn't. And with the amount of people who then go on to play Minecraft and the billions of dollars involved, this simple IRC channel turns out to be pretty important historically. What'll come of it will depend on the next generation of documentary and journalistic students to figure out what they're looking at. Speedrunning, meanwhile, has advanced in all sorts of ways, added all sorts of innovations. There's something called tool-assisted speedrunning, where you're able to play a game frame by frame and indicate what buttons were pressed, and people have used this to prove the limits of what the game is capable of. You have to label it as tool-assisted, but there are games out there where if you watch the tool-assisted version, it is like looking at the most vicious, godlike creature playing a video game to death. But those tool-assisted speedruns then give regular speedrunners hints on where they should start doing research if they want to make their game times go down. There's an inspiring set of additional assistive programs to do all the timing of speedrunning while you're speedrunning. People can look on a Twitch channel and in the corner see a bunch of times and even indicate how above or below the world record the current play is in a moment. Level by level, which seconds are being added and lost from the world record as the player plays. There are discussions between all of the speedrunners on all sorts of aspects of the games themselves. It'll turn out that the European version plays different than the Japanese version, or you'll have cases where if the player plays on an emulator, the nature of the emulator can actually affect the program in a way that isn't obvious. It's not making it faster or slower, but it'll turn out there's a bug and they have to accommodate for that. I mean, there's no true, universal, global, massive speed running body. There isn't some non-profit running somewhere that dictates how all speed running is. There's a number of organizations that are community-driven that people decide to follow the rules of. But the fact of the level of amateur organization that makes speed running function from day to day, especially when you're talking about milliseconds of differences, I mean, that's really inspiring to me. But the most inspiring thing is an event that happens a couple times a year. It's called Games Done Quick, and it's a live stream, week-long event that has speedrunning for charity. Not kidding. You tune in and they are playing games 24 hours a day. Folks are sitting on a couch that we see, and we watch a game being speedrun, often with an intent to hit the world record at the event. And almost every year, you can see a couple records get broken. The whole event is done for charity. People give money to different speedrunners to show their support for both the player and for the charity being helped. And these numbers break into the millions. My hope is to go to the speedrunning event next year. It'll be the first time I'm there in person. I know that it's something that's just so incredibly geeky, and unless you really sit someone down and explain why it's so compelling, I know it doesn't sell itself. It sounds strange. It sounds off-putting even to folks who are not really into a given game. I mean, if you've never heard of the game and you're being told that somebody's going to go through it faster than anybody else in the world, that's a tough sell. But when you combine it with a person who is knowledgeable, sitting on the couch next to them during an event like this, and they're walking you through why what the person just did was amazing and what they learned to do it and why people will make choices. They'll use terms like frame specific, which means you have to jump at the right 1/60th of a second to be able to hit this particular glitch, or explaining that there's one section that randomness comes into, and if the player doesn't get the right randomness, they could be knocked out of the race immediately. It's that color commentary that really gives it a focus that even if you don't know much about the game, you're part of the game. As somebody who dabbles in game history, this sort of thing is vital. If we don't have people who give context and give documentation and go through things like creating small documentaries about how things used to be, we don't know how good our history is. We don't know what footage, what writings, what recordings are out there and what would be important to somebody in the future. And I'll tell you that driving from Chicago to New York, trying to avoid getting caught in a storm, there was no better companion than the words of Summoning Salt washing over me as he talked about people being focused, clear, and intending to become, if only for a day or a week, the absolute best at something in the world. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to Adam Green, Mark Pilgrim, James Bekoyanu, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been helping me stay out of debt. The first draft of this podcast was recorded in 36 minutes and 59 seconds. Time